We've just had the blessing of a 7-day sesshin here. And with about 60 some odd human participants and infinite company of grasses and trees and other little creatures. Those who participated were asked, all of us, put aside the human voices. This was the practice, to put aside the human voices, to set aside our daily concerns and our own incessant internal voiceover, the roof brain chatter that goes on, the monologue that just streams kind of continually, and the words of others and the media. And for this period of time to allow the mind to rest, which is really what we do in our practice, whether we're in sesshin or the ordinary daily routines, having a time set aside to and dedicated to resting the thinking mind allows us to bring a real balance into our human setup, allows us to be truly human. When we can open all of our humanity, our human base, human body base, to the life that we share that's always all around us, always going on. But it's easier said than done. And it's such a huge transition for those of you who've done sesshin, or those of you who haven't but weren't at sesshin, there's such a transition between coming here and suddenly the first bell rings and we enter into noble silence, which means that the entire Sangha embraces the treasure that is the silent mind and begins to enact it. And slowly over the course of the week, it really becomes our default mode more and more. Or even just for a few moments can be life transforming. it was our practice this week. Excuse me. To spend our days and nights in the fields and the meadow and the woods all around. And listen with our whole body and mind. And look with our whole body and mind. And smell with our whole body and mind. And taste with the mouth of our eyes and ears. And touch and lean against and lie down on the forest floor and climb into trees, earth, leaves, mossy arbors, gaze at the sky, gaze at the lowering light of day toward the end of day, and the rising, the coming forward of light in the morning, and the mist pouring over the coast range in the early morning. When the mist comes over the range, we can see its water nature. It pours over like a waterfall almost. So quieting the mind, settling the mind, stopping the talking chatter is much easier said than done. But we, who come from the earth, had wonderful help from the earth and the sky. And the practice of taking refuge in non-human voices, in all of the non-human voices, and the valley sounds, the voices of trees and grass. And the voices of the objects that serve us. The bells, clackers, work tools, the cooking utensils, the zafus, all of which also come from the earth. All of us, all are from the earth air, fire, water, and space. No separation, essentially, and yet we really lose track of our earth nature so much. The words grasses and trees are categorical words. They're kind of stereotypes, really general, but in reality, grasses and trees are all specific ones, just like the word people. Well, in reality, people is you and you and you, each of us in our own individual unique form. So it's important, and it becomes so clear during intensive practice that we not fall into, disappear entirely into our words and concepts, but let all sentient and insentient beings speak for themselves in their own unique voices. And this is what became so apparent over the course of the week. And what we call the forest is actually a wonderful disorder of life. Leaves, twigs, mosses, fungi, trees old and grand, bent and moss-covered. There was one tree I sat under that, I guess it was an old maple. It was one of the grand old maples. And I sat in one spot in relation to it, and it was one tree. And it looked very straight and even. I moved around a little bit. It was incredibly bent, and it was being taken over by moss, and it had something growing out of its back, which is what happens to us when we get old. We have all kinds of odd things growing out of us. That's a fairly intimate perception of this wonderful tree. And each of the trees embodies rootedness and impartiality. There's a koan that says, be an old tree in a high wind. And for that, we really have to recognize the solidity and rootedness in impartiality, and also the connection and touching and how high winds move even grand old trees. And we live in a world with very high winds blowing. So being clearly in touch with our deep rootedness, our rootedness in quiet mind, our rootedness in earth energy is essential to maintain our presence and our wisdom and our generosity, just as old trees are always generous, stable, deeply rooted. And the Dharma wheel turns and turns. The Dharma wheel is covered with twigs and lichen and ferns and bleeding hearts, trillium, and all the countless, boundless microbial community. And the days turn into nights, sun into rain, into wind, into heat. We had the most miraculous July weather for this Sesshin. So mild, so much like the weather was here to support us to be quite at our ease and not have too much more difficulty becoming one in the forest and opening, relaxing deeply. So the mind could settle. The wind settles. The beetle sings. I didn't realize that there are some beetles that sing. And leaves fall. I was walking in the meadow in the dark coming back, and I started seeing all of these lights in the grass. It almost looked like iridescence, but actually they were fallen alder leaves that had turned yellow, and they emit light. while the forest grows dark. All of this is beyond words and beyond thought. Words and thought unnecessary, extraneous, very narrowing. All the sounds, there are so many constant sound, this field of sound. Any moment we can stop and we can hear just this very, the sounds mark the moment, they mark the mini moment. They are here and then they're done. So if ever you're engaging in a practice of impermanence, listen to sound. It's a pure demonstration. The first star at night, the birds, the insects, the coyotes, and all of the unknown creatures shuffling around under the twig carpet. It's always so startling to be sitting for, I don't know, a half hour. I was sitting on a big old log for a half hour, entirely still, and all of a sudden, something that had been sitting there alongside me under this carpet of twigs and leaves left, moved. I have no idea what it was. We're always in company. We're accompanied by unseen things. There's so much unseen, so much we're not aware of, that is friendly and helpful. And that's also enjoying our company, which is another reason to cultivate the way so that we are good company. It's one thing we can add to this troubled world is to be good company. So Sesshin and Sangha practice provides the ideal conditions for renewing and deepening and opening our awareness and our hearts. Lots of companionship. Lots of companionship helps us hold the seat of Zazen, hold the practice. Chanting that aligns the rhythms of breath and Buddha wisdom with our one voice, or in our one voice. This is like the frogs that agree to chorus together in the pond. Joyfully. We are a bunch of frogs when we chant. A schedule that choreographs the daily routine and provides a reliable structure of balanced activity and stillness, which shows us the way. We can take from Sesshin practice this prompting during our daily life is to have a balance of activity and stillness, of engagement of body and mind, and stoppage. We've really lost the art of sabbatical or Sabbath. And so we learn again, we can appreciate that an aspect of this practice is Sabbath, is stopping and opening to the unconditioned. Stepping out of our human narrow human busyness and joining the spirit of the world, the great world. As the week went on, many folks were relieved of, to varying degrees of the burden of what Han Shan described as the cycle of affliction. Honing the concentrated mind, seeing forms with the whole body and mind, hearing sounds with the whole body and mind, one understands them intimately. These lines from Genjo Koan, which we chanted every day, really tell us precisely what happens when we bring our whole self forward. Face to face with squirrel, or face to face with mopping up a puddle from the floor of coffee. There was a very large coffee puddle in the tea area the other day. And someone fully engaged in mopping it up. It was inspiring to see this wholehearted mopping going on. The mosquito buzzing in its own particular way. You know, when the mosquito comes to buzz, they are buzzing in our own particular ear. We come together. We have an affinity. So face to face, we meet our life with openness and wholeheartedness. So Sesshin is time out. It's a sabbatical. Time out of time. Time out from all the habitual ways we have of nourishing our suffering and our dissatisfaction and keeping it going. When we're trying to be someone that we're not, or we're trying not to be some way that we are, something else, something more, something less, or some other time, or some other place, or some other person, or some other job. There's always this going somewhere else, this separating activity, or anticipating separating activity, or bringing toward activity, always going on. We get a break from that in Sesshin. All the ways that we separate from what is, we get a good look at. There is a wonderful Ojibwe chant that goes, sometimes, well, this is not in the Ojibwe language, this is a translation. Unfortunately, I don't know the Ojibwe language. Sometimes I go about pitying myself, and all the time I am being carried on great winds across the sky. Sometimes I go about pitying myself, and all time I'm being carried on great winds across the sky. We're always being carried on the great winds. St. Augustine makes a similar observation. People travel to wonder at the height of mountains, at the huge waves of the sea, at the long courses of rivers, at the vast compass of the ocean, and the circular motion of the stars. And they pass by themselves without wondering. That's so simply said, but it's so true, huh? Practice doesn't let us pass by ourselves without wondering. Sooner or later, it really gets to us, and it begins to work. It begins to do its work. We noted during the Sesshin that when we begin, we expend tremendous energy. But at a certain point, the Sesshin takes over. Practice takes over. And we simply open and relax, and the practice does itself. And we begin to learn about the nature of our own minds and experience. This is the solitary aspect of our practice, which is supported broadly by all of life. But also, and now as we go back into our daily life, floods back in, and notice your reaction when I bring this up, the world of media, of political goings-on, of the military situation in the world and domestically. You notice any anxiety come up? I think it's really, and that's actually what I want to point at right now, is we are part of a world community, and we practice for ourselves, and we practice for the world community. We're returning from Sesshin, or we are returning from Sangha practice on a Sunday morning, and we encounter the world as it is, with its profound suffering and its tremendous joy and love. There's the ongoing violence of speech and action that's now part of our community life. We're all confronted with it. and the ever-present commercialism and media presenting our world to us in its own particular way of seeing a world without spirit, without much love, which a lot, with a lot of threat and danger. Danger to our way of life, danger to our bodies, danger to our food supply, our habits. This is a collective view that sweeps us all along into its wind. All the more important to treasure and uphold this practice, to bring it deeply in, to be very committed to awakening moment by moment in every situation, beginning with our own inner world and our inner reactivity as we go about in the world. The ongoing violence of speech and action that we are all part of in our community life brings weariness and discouragement and a lot of fear and aversion. Does anybody else beside me feel this? It's really in the forefront now of our lives. On the collective level, there are so many competing motivations and visions of what's best for the world and what's best for the country. And greed, hatred and aversion, and ignorance of the true situation, of our true nature, is the marker of all of this samsaric world, this samsaric display. The world of desire, the world of endless human talk and concepts, which distorts the true nature, that distorts and distracts us from the true nature of our life and cuts us off from our ability to live from this true nature. And we get very caught up in a lot of work trying to make samsara different. But actually, it's the first noble truth. The truth of difficulties in the world and the truth of difficulties within us. All of the practice in the world is not going to change the nature of samsara. But a very deep and committed practice can change the way we show up in that world and what we bring, the energies that we bring, the energies of clear mind, kindness, patience, humor, hopefully, joy. Very powerful. We have the blessing of being able to walk the Buddha way, which brings us to and keeps in mind the possibility of being in a direct relationship with the way things really are, the way things actually are. Very simply and directly are. We can live in the world of conditions, in the samsaric world of desire and aversion, with all the suffering and dissatisfaction that this pulls along in its wake, while we practice developing our clear seeing and open heart. We take refuge in sesshin, we take refuge in our practice, we take refuge in the sangha. And we bring the treasure that is the Dharma into our bodies and embody it in the world. Nobody wants to be talked at. And that's an important thing to remember as we go out, is not necessary to talk at, but to bring in the quality of our personhood, how sesshin was, in the quality of our personhood, how this practice helps us be kinder and more understanding and less full of agenda. We can find ourselves time and again in the very narrow tube of daily life and forget the enormity of our actual lives. So one of the ways to work with this challenge with ourselves, as we are very stirred up in worldly conditions is to use the four foundations of mindfulness. Whenever we're caught, if we are kind of disengaged from the earth, our earth nature, we bring ourselves back first to what am I experiencing in the body, in this body? That's the first foundation of mindfulness. In the body, body as body. Where is it in my body? What's the quality of how I'm holding this experience? The second foundation is feelings. It just in terms of whether it is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So as I locate my experience in this moment in my body, I notice it's really unpleasant, but actually there's something pleasant about being really pissed off about something. Know that. Own that. It's freeing to recognize all that works on us. The third foundation is mindful of consciousness, which I think of as the weather front, kind of the energetic cloud or quality of our mind and flesh body. Are we contracted? Are we expanded? Is there a lot of jittery energy? Is it frozen? Is it hot? That aspect of our experience. So you could even at this very moment check that out. What is this? What is the quality of my consciousness right now? Is it very focused? Is it scattering? And then the fourth is mental formations. We could say the fourth is form, which means anything actually is a form in the mind. I like to think, to specialize that a little bit and think about what else is going on. So while I am, let's say I'm really reactive to a news story and I'm holding it in my body and I'm both, it's really distressing and I'm very anxious, but it also kind of gets me really angry, which feels a little bit good because I'm not just rolling back and being rolled over. You know, if I inquire into the source of why it feels good or what that's about, I know myself even a little bit more thoroughly what's going on. What are my thoughts? One of my thoughts is always, I'm responsible. I hear something going on at the other side of the world. I feel responsible. That's important to recognize how responsible I feel and what, how do I relate to that prompting. That's a thought, and it's also a deep history that I inherit. And it's also true. And it's also a thought. I mean, it's a lot of things. But to recognize what's at work, is this is how we work with all of our internal landscape. So I urge you, when in doubt, to remember the four foundations of mindfulness. It's one of the methods that this wonderful tradition offers us for opening up our mind and heart. We can all vow to practice vigorously with our awareness of our mind states, our awareness of fear and reactivity, and love and joy and sadness, whatever it is, anxiety. When we work with the nature of our own fear, we then are much more likely to recognize it in others, to see through the appearance and the efforts that others have to disguise from us or themselves their own fear. It helps to be able to recognize fear in others. It releases both of us from an automatic kind of behavior with each other. And this comes up in demonstrations. This comes up in all kinds of situations. When somebody's being really aggressive, it's really important to see what lies beneath that. if our intention is not to fuel any further fear and reactivity, but instead to fuel calming, connection, and understanding. That is our vow as bodhisattvas. And it springs forth even in the darkest times. Our joy and our love spring forth from the primal source and refresh us. We always touch back. We can always touch back. The strange beauty of the world must somehow rest on pure joy. Our true home. So please face your fear in this instance when it comes up. Recognize it directly. Recognize the many faces of it. And don't be fooled. Don't be fooled.